The 1996 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 261. No comment? My PPI with Mr. A number 1 and the Little Misses. A paper by Zimmer Shader Laumach, also known as Chris Conkling. Please note that because this is a 60-minute session, the last 30 minutes on the second side of this tape may be blank.
Welcome to Sunstone. About 3 months ago, one of our most long-term Sunstone subscribers found on his doorstep a manila envelope with this strange note. Last week, I witnessed the most extraordinary interview. Whether out of my body or out of my mind, I could not tell. He didn't appear like George Burns, but he did offer to reduce himself to human language, logic, and looks. My interview with Mr. A1 is attached. In keeping with my devotion to following the examples of Joseph Smith and other prophets, you can call me Shedder Leomak. The said Sunstone subscriber sent us this paper with his own note attached. Although I have a personal philosophy of never doubting anyone's personal spiritual experiences, in all honesty, I must say that I think this interview is a hoax, full of heresy. But here it is, if you want it. Good luck. To recreate that interview today, we have asked some friends to read parts of the interview for us. Welcome to the panel, what should we call you?
Oh, Mr. Inevitable, A number 1 is fine, or since we're in a corporate age, chairman of the board is okay.
And this is?
This is the Little Misses.
Welcome. This is a little overwhelming. Where can we start?
I've only got 45 minutes.
Well, I can ask anything, right?
No comment.
No comment? Even you use no comment?
No comment. Just joking. It'd be hell if I did.
You use hell?
Only as a place, never as a cuss word.
Oh, you mean literally. It would be hell if you were to give no comments. I get it.
Quick today, aren't we, Sparky? Let me slow down my thinking skills to human level. Okay, now I'm slowing way down. Well, that's too slow. Almost sounded like a high council speaker. What I meant was, well, yes, hell has no comments from me, but my commenting, well, it creates its own special kind of hell now, doesn't it?
No. We want revelation.
Really? Well, in theory, yes. If you're bothering to be a Mormon at all, it's either because you think it's the coolest social club in the world, and hopefully I've made it too difficult, boring, and unenjoyable for that, or because, unlike most churches, you actually do desire continuous revelation from me. True?
We want your comments. But if I can be honest, most of your comments lately seem to sound like they are coming from white, old, Provo, suburban, American businessmen. We hear a lot more about long hair and short skirts and wearing ties in the chapel and women quitting their jobs than about, well, poverty and hunger and world peace and the ozone problem.
Really, you think so? Let me take some notes. I can change that.
Are you being facetious?
I'm here to learn. Why tell you to pray if I can't listen? You do think I can listen.
Of course you can. You're omnipotent. But, well, don't you already know that?
Oh, I get it. I already know this. It's just those Salt Lake boys getting it wrong again. If they were only more in tune.
Well, don't you ever get frustrated with some of their sermons?
Bored, maybe. But let's be honest. Continuous revelation is a huge problem. The only reason for Mormonism's existence and a complete no-win situation for me. I mean, if I don't talk often enough, how did Melville put it? Silence is at once the most harmless and the most awful thing in all nature. Silence is the only voice of our God. But if I talk all the time, then I'm interfering. I'm stifling your agency and your growth. If what I say doesn't make sense, then my prophets don't have a clue about what's really going on. But if it makes too much sense, then any old fool could have figured it out. Who needs a prophet for that? When they asked my son the greatest commandments, he couldn't do any better than to rehash Deuteronomy and Leviticus. Hey, Jimmy Swaggart can quote scripture if that's all we need. Revelation is simply a no-win situation.
Well, it's just that some revelations seem eternally true and moving, And some will seem less inspired.
And some of the parts you felt were boring at 12 are incredibly moving at 80. And some that strike you today did nothing for the Israelites 2,800 years ago. Face it, church is boring and irrelevant 80% of the time. So what? So is work, so is raising kids, so is school and baseball and Shakespeare and Beethoven. But is there 20% that absolutely knocks you for a loop? That's what you have to ask yourself. This sound bit sitcom, a laugh every 45 seconds or lose market share approach to life, is extremely modern and frightening. Now, that's not to say that to be boring is identical with being spiritual, but...
But if occasionally we heard the outrage of Job or the anger of Amos, he called the rich people cows, then we'd get a better sense that you really are there.
Hey, I tell people to read the scriptures 20 times a year. You don't get a sense that I'm there because you don't really want me to be there. What's that bumper sticker I just saw? God isn't dead, he just has Alzheimer's. Grandpa God is just getting a little forgetful, kids, but he still loves you. He really does. Even the image of father nowadays is an image with too much power, influence, brutality, and even sexual energy. But Grandpa is impotent. He's already had his prostate operation, and there's nothing to fear from cuddling on his lap. Glaucomic, cataractic, so I won't see clearly, won't notice, and certainly won't judge all your little sins. You want it both ways, a loving, caring God who just can't do anything. Fact is, you want me to have Alzheimer's. I get no respect, I tell you.
You're sort of like Rodney Dangerfield.
I can't win. It's like that poem, that one kid put in that poem, Thumbless. Once, when I first started shaking hands with God, he was always a finger or so short, a couple knuckles at least, half nod, keloid quilted studs, dang that blasted buzzsaw, fan belt 30-06, scaly, oil-soaked, fungus-thickened thumbnail clipped below the quick, eyebrows gone haywire, forest peeking out his nose, small hay-shot home, forearms as hard as his attitudes, never even wanted to see Manhattan, almost never took the wife out, saggy to the navel, but they had a pride of straw-haired kids come from somewhere. Can you imagine? Long, slow words on those hot, hard afternoons. Quoting somebody, quoting somebody, quoting somebody. Will we ever get away? His Old Testament edges were not colorful. Reliable is not that much of a compliment, considering. Still, as much smarter than him as I knew I was, I knew he could see clean through me. Scum couldn't take him at all. Now, gentler, smoother, younger, corrified... Dodge-eyed hand grips dissolved to minty hugs. Micro, soft fingerprints manicured for heaven's sake. Pleasing to the touch. I can't figure it out. Don't ask me why. Most folks gag at ground-up finger parts. I can't take to God in a condo. See, I'm too modern for some people and not enough for others. Cannot win.
Horrified?
Yeah, horrified, core horror, core values. Love that word.
I don't want to sound like a prude, but I'm somewhat surprised you're so irreverent.
Of course, the gospel is much, much too important to be taken seriously.
I beg your pardon?
Sure. I mean, if all the churches are equally true, then one can be as serious and boring as it wants. Who cares who's offended? Let them go somewhere else to get saved. But if one church really is true, then it can't bear to offend anyone except on only the fewest, most critical issues. It's got to be involved in goofy teenage dances and music, roadshows and basketball tournaments, and funny, imperfect speeches, or it won't reach anybody.
Well, let's move on.
Go for it. 1,000 years a day, I'm more expensive than F. Lee Bailey.
Now, this is just a personal thought, but why do donuts have to be so fattening and lima beans so healthy? Couldn't you have reversed that?
If you ask me the boxer versus briefs questions, I'm out of here.
Well, do you mind if I ask personally, emotionally, what kind of people anger you the most, like, well, besides mass murderers?
Emotionally? Easy, that's the ungrateful.
You want people to bow down and thank you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a little. I mean, if you knew how hard I worked to get certain things right.
Well, like what?
Like the sunset. Now, that was tough, or airplanes. Do you know there are people who will actually pull down the shades during takeoff and miss those first seconds of weightless thrill watching cars and people below turn into toys and then into ants and then into nothing? One of the great dreams and miracles of all time, and people pull down the shades and sleep through it? That kills me. There are even Mormons who will not drive 200 miles out of their way to see Monument Valley or the Alpine Loop. For $10, people can have the best orchestra in the world playing the Ode to Joy in their front seat, and 90% of them don't. My wrath is kindled against people who don't shed tears of joy 10 times a day. And I haven't even mentioned the more common ingratitudes.
Well, like what?
Oh, like those fat Republicans who actually claim sincerely that they are self-made men, forgetting, of course, who made the country, who gave them a stable home, the medical science, which kept their brains from wasting away in childhood, the schools and laws which allow them to prosper beyond their worth. People who bear their testimonies and then in the same breath add, how come she brought a Mexican with her? It works both ways, though. Look at the poor filled with hate and resentment against America, never stopping to bow their heads and realize that despite all the genuine unfairness, they're still living better off than 90% of all the other humans who ever have lived. All the sacrifice and still no gratitude or sense of something owed back. It kills me, and it's not good for them either. An ungrateful person can never truly be happy.
Maybe people are struggling too much to feel grateful. Some feel you don't really appreciate those who struggle with life and truth. I mean, anciently, Jacob, whose name was He Who Clings to the Heel Holder, what a name, wrestled with an angel and got his name changed to Israel, struggled with God, or God Fighter. That's the name of your chosen nation. Your chosen nation. Struggle with God? I mean, isn't struggle the point?
Sometimes.
Sometimes?
Well, look, there should be no confusion. It's about my highest value. It's not faith or hope or charity or goodness. It is goodness and love. Paul says it, John says it, Moroni says it, King Benjamin says it, my son says it. I may be omniscient, but there's one thing I don't know how I possibly could have said it any plainer. And of course not love of mankind alone without love of God. That only leads to hideous politics and made-up morals. And not love of God alone without love of people. That leads to inhuman piety. Ethical monotheism, love of God and humanity. Not art for its own sake or obedience or church callings or scholarship or even despair and struggle and self-awareness. Love doing good. All the other things are tools to that end. Do I want people to develop talents and doubt and struggle and grow and come to Christ? Why? So they can rely on the mercy and grace of Jesus and repent. Why? So they can change and get the Spirit. Why? So they can become like us and do the acts that we would do if we were here. But the acts are the ultimate goal. It's that simple.
That's the meaning of life?
Of course. Beetloo.
Beetloo?
Beetloo. B-T-L-O-O. Bless the lives of others.
Oh, so like totally forget ourselves in the service of others.
Hello.
Submit. Sacrifice. No self-fulfillment. No self-fulfillment?
I didn't say to ignore yourselves. You are one of the others, so bless your own life as well. But treat yourself exactly as well as you'd treat the others. No better, no worse. Bless implies religion, me, not doing just what you feel like. Frankly, a lot of what goes on inside the church and out here in the alternatives is not focused on blessing.
Now wait. Suddenly, you're talking about faith-promoting history versus true history. It's okay to lie for the Lord?
Well, there are times to lie. I mean, if you're hiding Anne Frank in your attic, I'd damn you to hell if you didn't lie. Trouble is, 99% of the time we are tempted to lie, we're not hiding Anne Frank, so it's a tricky principle. But when it comes to history, I'm not saying to even hide the truth or lie, but I can see people's innermost hearts, and it's very obvious when something is said in a way which will bless or destroy. Beetloo. That's almost everything that matters there, and you didn't even have to climb the Himalayas.
Hey, we're cooking. Got the meaning of life out of the way. Cool. Now, what about politics? I mean, I'm told you don't want to sleep around like JFK, but would you really have voted for Nixon?
Politics is another no-winner. Should we enforce the Bible legally?
Well, of course not.
So you're a libertarian. No legal limits on pornography or prostitution or drug use. No prayer in school. Total separation.
Well, I'm not a libertarian, but basically, yes, I don't want biblical morality enforced.
Except for redistributing the wealth and helping the poor and healing the sick and busing and public education. Only then do you quote the Bible.
It's very complicated. I could defend my values without the Bible, though.
Yeah, but could you sell them without it? See, we could discuss air pollution and slavery and 100 other issues and all the missionary work and family home evenings in the world didn't do a thing to help. On the other hand, 70% of all incarcerated juveniles come from fatherless homes. It's one thing that gang members and O.J. Simpson and even computer hackers have in common. Divorces of even middle-income and religious families, huge percentages of the children suffer for decades. All the social safety net programs in the world aren't worth a thing if the families fall apart, and all the strong families in the world aren't worth much if they don't do something. What's the new in thing right now, fiscally conservative but socially liberal? I'm just the opposite. More spending for the poor and more public support for family morality. Unless I really do believe and teach them correct principles and don't enforce charity or morality libertarianism. See, I couldn't get elected dog catcher today. And dog is me spelled backwards.
But it's up to us ultimately, right? We are free to follow and vote our own consciences.
That question takes us all the way back to Adam and Eve. That wasn't me making you free. That was their choice to ignore my commandments and let humans do it on their own, without me.
But you wanted Eve and Adam to break that commandment.
I did?
Didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes?
No.
What?
Frankly, my son and I split on the issue. That's why they got two commandments.
What?
He always wants to heal everyone and comfort them and keep them safe from harm, nice and cozy in their little gardens. He said if I kicked them out of the garden, there would be war and hunger and abuse and torture and desperation. I would be a neglectful, abusive parent. But I said, counting the pre-existence, they're teenagers already, cut the apron strings. Fact is, everyone's eternal existence, there will have to come a time when they try it completely on their own with no constant interference from me. Leave the nest, go on the heroic journey, the mission, the walkabout. That's what Earth life is. He said that Adam and Eve will only know I love them if they feel my constant companionship. I said they'll only know I love them if I leave them the heck alone, if I trust them that much. He said if I leave nature free, there will come earthquakes and typhoons, SIDS, AIDS, and cancer. What meaning of life will a starving Somalian baby get out of her two-day life? I said, what meaning will everyone else get if no one is allowed to die until age 70? We can't stop crack babies unless we physically stop people from taking crack. People thank me constantly for all the angels, the coincidences, the little miracles. They should thank me for all the random chance accidents. Every time a truly righteous person gets mangled or murdered, people should drop to their knees and shout, "Hallelujah, praise the Lord for making life truly arbitrary, for having enough confidence in human beings to trust them absolutely to face this entire horrible, terrible, wonderful experience all on their random chance, non-interfering own." Does anyone really want to wake up and find all the rocks were only papier-mâché boulders at Disneyland? So we told them both truths. They would have to have the final voice. That way they got the blame and the glory.
Your son and you can't disagree. You have the same mind and will. You're both, well, you.
If we both agreed on everything, one of us is superfluous. Opposite things can be true. Haven't you read 2 Nephi 2:15? Must needs be there in opposition, even the forbidden fruit in opposition to the tree of life, the one being sweet and the other bitter. Now, what's your antecedent there, grammatically speaking?
You mean, which is the one and which is the other?
Exactly. Does the first refer to the first? Or is it a chiasm where the last refers to the first? Which fruit is sweet and which is bitter?
You wrote it.
We wrote it. My son thinks safety and spiritual closeness is sweet. I think it's bitter, ultimately, in the long run. I think experiencing real life to the bony, bloody marrow is sweet no matter how bitter it gets. Adam and Eve said they wanted to try it on their own, so we let them. Keep our hands off. Let evolution and chance take over.
So we are alone then? I mean, prayer doesn't work?
Of course it works sometimes. Every time you pray, your Savior, he's called your advocate, in Greek parakletos, your pleader, your defense counsel, your Johnny Cochran, comes and argues your case, begs for you, pleads for you, bugs me to let him interfere and save and do miracles. I'm against it on principle, but every now and then he gets his way.
Well, how can we believe that God is good if he won't do miracles and stop evil?
Miracles are another no-winner. If I respect my son, if I rescue my son before Herod killed all the babies, what, I don't love the other babies equally? If I do miracles all day long, no one grows. What's the point? You pray for me to come down and cure AIDS. You should get on your knees and beg me not to cure AIDS. Let it do its worst, and somehow, eventually, humans will gather the collective willpower, money, self-control, and scientific knowledge to cure it once and for all, like polio. If I do the miracles, I've got to keep on doing them. If people solve the problem, they stay solved for good. In this unique way, humans are more powerful than God.
Now, wait a second. Let me get this. We should be thankful for disasters and not pray for miracles. Well, what about Mormon chapter 9?
Well, at least make up your mind on the issue. You want me to butt out and mind my own business when it comes to telling you how old the earth is or how many babies to have or what kind of movies to see or what kind of four-letter words to put in your sundial short stories or what you should or shouldn't publish. Why can't Mr. A number one mind his own business? But suddenly, when it comes to fighting communism or Jeffrey Dahmer, enforcing international law or keeping the peace, suddenly it's turned everything over to the old man upstairs. Let him clean up all our little sins and heal all our little problems. Do you want to stay in the garden or do you want to leave it? Do you want a God who tells you how to live righteously and do justice, or do you want an upstairs maid who picks up after you? Well, honey child, this God don't do windows. Although every now and then I just might, depends on my moods. The point of life is to get you to learn how to live righteously on your own. You enforce the laws. You do the social justice thing. You want to let all the barbarians go free and toast 6 million Jews and think it pleases me because your pacifistic heart is oh so pure and your hands are oh so clean? Maybe, but that's not what my good book says. Look, if it's a no-winner for me, it's the same for you. You want to stop capital punishment because of the 1 in 1,000 who might be innocent and you don't want blood on your hands? Well, if you stop capital punishment, plenty of innocent kids are going to die anyway, maybe more without it than with it. I'm not telling you how to think. I'm telling you to face the music honestly. Just don't tell me you want me in your life when you don't.
You said in the Doctrine and Covenants 105:14, you said you'd fight our battles for us.
So now life is black and white, you who love all the shades of gray. Look, life and freedom are bloody. I shouldn't have to tell you people that. That's the point of the whole thing. Why do you think I want you so spiritually prissified? Look at how I made life, sex and having babies, origin of life and the offal of refuse from the same organs. Now, why did I do that? Priesthood holders panting, spiritual wives with their legs in the stirrups, blaspheming to high heaven, pushing and grunting to make a miracle called life, modest as Madonna. Quiet, reverent sacrament meetings? Sure, as long as the baby isn't teething and splashing diarrhea and vomit all over. Look up the word blessing. It comes from the same root as the word bloody. Life is messy. And it's conservatives, too. It's so fun for them to sermonize. Now, kids, always ask his advice when tempted to date at 14 or buy that immodest prom dress. But do they really want to know my advice when they're heading off to the deer hunt or buying that new diamond ring or the $40,000 sport utility vehicle or voting to keep the hungry Mexicans in their place? Read the scriptures. Know my mind. Beat Lou. You're all hypocrites.
One more question before we leave Adam and Eve. Are you telling us that all those Bible stories are all literally true?
The first 5 books of the Bible are called the Torah, the law. But Torah really means teaching, instruction. You've got to ask, what is trying to be taught? What am I supposed to learn from this? They're not called the history or science books or even the doctrinal encyclopedia. I could list all the important doctrines in 25 pages if that's what I was after. Back to your question, the Garden of Eden story is just about the truest, most important story in the entire Bible.
Well, in historical reality, like in 4004 B.C. or whatever?
Oh, you've got 45 minutes with the creator of the universe and you want to talk time management? We are in a corporate age. Look, Steve Covey and Hiram Smith are my time management prophets. Call them.
Well, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. From what you just said, I take it you're not a scriptural literalist. You just said those are stories, right? Now, I don't want to misinterpret.
I just said they are very true stories. I just said they are very important stories, carefully designed to teach you something.
But literally, word for word, true historical stories dictated by you exactly as they happened?
What do you want from me? A long dissertation on E and J? I have so little power I can't influence whoever wrote them to say what I wanted them to say? It's like, I don't know, watching Othello and reading the Iliad and worrying about Shakespeare and Homer's true identity. It's trivial nonsense. That's not why you fall in love with those books, and that's certainly not why I wrote the scriptures.
Excuse me, but I actually thought that deep down somewhere, I don't know quite how to say this, but I thought you'd be a liberal.
Look, I love liberals, and I love conservatives. No, wait. That's my son that has to love everyone, isn't it? I'm the one who gets to be jealous and hate and spew, aren't I?
I am a child of
God. So is Adolf Hitler. Frankly, one side trivializes and doctrinalizes the scriptures to death, and the other side analyzes and philologizes them to death. Both sides end up with dead scriptures, and I want them alive. Both sides miss the point.
Well, let me move on. A man in the audience just handed me a note. It reads, "How honest should I be? I love my wife and everything. But honestly, if fidelity and monogamy are so important to you, why did you have to make 9-year-olds, 19-year-olds look quite so darn attractive?"
Yeah, because 9-year-olds aren't that attractive. That is funny. It's hilarious, isn't it, honey? I don't mean to laugh. I suppose it's rude to laugh.
Being rude isn't a sin when you do it, because you're perfect.
Anyway, we're laughing because we were just discussing that. We were wondering if we... Could you fold these for me, by the way, sweetheart? We were just wondering if we shouldn't have given people not less of a sex drive, but twice as much of a sex drive.
We have too little sex drive? That's hardly the problem.
Yeah, so you say, I'll tell you. I mean, on Earth, we went way, way out of our way to make everyone here dog bone ugly. Even your supermodels and hunks, they have these big, hideous, floppy, ugly, wart-like growths that we put on their faces, ears. Those are elephant man birth defects in other galaxies. People end up in leper colonies. And we already cut your testosterone hormone levels in half compared to the last few planets. I'm still not certain we got it right. I mean, the last planet had twice the sex drive, and it had a lot of costs, but it had big benefits, too. Admittedly, we had to send floods and earthquakes and lightning and General Conference pass around the chewing gum stories every third day or so just to keep people in line. But on the other hand, no returned missionary went for years without marrying. There wasn't a bachelor man or woman over 22 on the entire planet. And husband and wife squabbles? Non-existent. A man cannot bear to sleep alone out on the couch, let alone go through divorce or trial separation. People made up in 10 minutes. Marriages were the most romantic things ever seen. No one worked more than 5 minutes from home or got a lot done. I admit, science and art and medicine and warfare stayed pretty primitive for millennia. Working late at the lab was unheard of. But there was very little crime. No one could bear to go off to war 6 months a year. The best we could get out of missionaries was 90 days at a shot. Romance and family was everything and all the time. So that's why we decided to tone down sex on Earth. Science has happened incredibly fast here, as has warfare and anger and music and medicine. We don't have to send fire and brimstone quite so often. People are a little more grown up. But we don't dare reduce the sex drive any further. The internal combustion engine would be invented the first 500 years, and all the natural resources would be used up in another 5. Marriages would last about a week. It's funny, however, how you people think there are good and bad things and never seem to realize that every bad thing has a weakness and every good thing has a cost. People who demand change often assume it will come with no negatives, and there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. Everything has a cost. Anyway, as far as the cute guys and girls in the tight pants, I'm sorry. We tried to make them as ugly as we could.
Would you mind terribly if we switched the conversation and asked Sister if we asked your wife a few questions?
Be my guest, but you certainly don't need my permission.
Well, how are you? This is very awkward, but many of your daughters especially long to know more about you and emulate you. There are many theories about why you don't communicate more. Well, have you been silenced? Is there some official reason?
No.
Wow! We've heard from you at last! This is great! But why not before now? To protect you? So your name won't become a cuss word?
No.
Oh. Well, are you off doing great things and you just don't have time for your children? You're sort of the ultimate career woman.
Not at all.
This is sort of tough. What? I mean, how come... Are you not supposed to talk?
No.
You keep answering yes or no. Please, your children long to know about you. Can you just elaborate a little more about why we don't know more about you?
Well, frankly, this is a little embarrassing. I just like to support my husband and let him do the talking. By nature, this is so embarrassing. I guess I'm just very shy and private. I'm just a bit timid.
Shy? You can't be shy. You're perfect.
I beg your pardon. You're the first ones who want J. Golden Kimball and Hubie Brown to keep their personalities through the eternities. Why can't I keep mine? I just never felt comfortable speaking in public.
Shy. But then, well, does that imply that there might be times where the missus isn't shy?
Obviously.
Seriously?
Are you kidding? My cousin, well, you couldn't pronounce her name. It's sort of like Shirley. Shirley is the funniest person you've ever met. Dyed-in-the-wool faithful, but sassy and outspoken. You could not believe some of the things she would say. Well, over in her galaxy, she is talking and second-guessing her husband all the time. Total chaos. Their scriptures read like a Picasso painting. Craziness. I love her, don't get me wrong, but I think she's ruining those galaxies. And she thinks the same about me. What can I say? The church is a little more lively and controversial over there. My husband went for obedience and order. Her husband was a sculptor during his life. So most of the church leaders he calls are artists and scholars. Not very efficient, and honestly, not half the compassion and self-sacrifice as on earth. You know how artists can be. General conferences are circuses. But some of the souls over there, you know, the computer programmers, the secretaries, the kindergarten teachers, the shy moms and dads, well, they feel totally out of the church there. Unneeded, unwanted. They just try to be good, decent, down-to-planet people, and they are rarely given church callings. They're never quite accepted, no matter how devoted they are. Some bishops even have church courts if you're too soft-spoken. It's sad. They have this question on their chapel recommend which says, can you believe this? When was the last time you spoke out and challenged some old ideas? The last time you shook things up and let the world know you were a god or goddess in embryo and not a chair? Frankly, that's a very humiliating question to a person like me. Don't you think? Very uncomfortable. I'm glad that here at least I can be the kind of heavenly mother to comfort the meek and humble, the self-sacrificing and the shy. I begged my husband to let those normal, good people know in a quiet, spiritual way how much they are wanted and needed. And I think they feel quite at home in the church over here, don't you?
Can't help but love her.
Well, then how should I put this then? You don't, I would guess anyway, or maybe you do. Do you mind people who pray to you?
Oh, please.
Oh, it offends you?
You're making me blush. I mean, in private, if it makes them feel closer. But that is strictly between us, never in public. I mean, a church does have to have some rules. Otherwise, it's just a club where anyone can do whatever they feel like. Privacy makes a lot of things okay. That's what's so wonderful about the temple ceremony. You are completely free to interpret the ceremony in absolutely any way you want. Just as long as you never speak a word of it to anyone else, you have complete freedom. I'm sorry, I've said too much.
Oh, well, wait, no, wait. I mean, wait, no, please. Can I just ask a few more? We've waited so long.
Well, I'd prefer not to.
Oh, well, it's just that, well, we so want to get to know you, to know what it was like to grow up, to meet him. Well, what attracted you to him?
Even you want the wife to talk about how they met on a blind date at BYU?
You're right. I'm sorry.
No,
maybe
please.
I...
No, please, I'm just teasing. Even timid people can joke. He was sort of an accountant, only not with numbers, very by the book, somewhat strict. People didn't think he was overly emotional, but deep down he had a good heart, very tender to the poor and lonely. Even family thought he was tight-fisted, but he wouldn't give, because he wouldn't give fancy gifts to people who didn't need them. He saved it for those in true need. That's all. I'm sorry. I've said too much.
Oh, wait, please. This is our only... We've got to ask. I mean, well, we've got to ask, what about the priesthood? I mean, this is a burning issue. I mean, don't you have the priesthood?
I've had the authority to do whatever the Holy Ghost told me since I was 8 years old.
But the actual priesthood.
Can I say something here?
I can handle it, sweetheart. The power to act in my name. We are all goddesses and gods in embryo.
But so. All the offices. Passing the sacrament, healing, preaching, presiding. I mean, doesn't it bother you how some men get all high and mighty with that oh-so-spiritual bishop's voice? Now, sisters, all those games...
Unlike you, I happen to be able to see all those bishops, even their very deep, secret hearts, and honestly, you are describing only about 8.2% of them. I always hear those stories about how terrible they are. People used to say that about my husband, too, behind his back.
Hey, you know, an 8.2% jerk ratio is pretty darn good, let me tell you. People are humans. What can I do? The Artistes over in Cousin Shirley's galaxy, they have a 25% jerk ratio. You want Wagner or Liszt to be your bishop?
But please, I mean, is it just? Is it fair? It's not the 8.2%. It's the entire system. Women are second-class citizens. Now, is this really what you want for your daughters?
What I really, deep down, want for my children is to stop hurting each other. Most of all, I want my sons to stop hurting my daughters. And according to your own statistics, my sons do about 90% of all the physical hurting. You see, I read all those articles about why things should change, and the articles are beautifully said and emotionally true. But every single one of them leaves out this one little tiny paragraph, which is this: women in the church already outnumber men, and women out of the church aren't doing 90% of the physical evil in the world. Men are. Do you really want a world where the men have less importance in religion, feel less in need to attend? The key challenge of any civilization is how to civilize, tame, feminize, if you will, the men. And all the articles about making the church better for women leave out this crucial part of the argument. What the world needs most is more men in the church. How do we get them there voluntarily? We have a program now which gets a full one-third of little boys who are baptized to discipline themselves and stay close enough to the church to be worthy and willing to go on a mission at 19. Not good enough, but a miracle, given this day and age. Those who want to change everything better be sure they can replace it with something better that will make those boys feel important, needed, and wanted enough to fight every ounce of their natural inborn tendencies and voluntarily commit themselves to the immense sacrifices for faith, family, and fidelity. I can't pass laws telling my sons not to break my daughters' hearts or to be emotionally involved with their children. Men have little enough self-discipline, even in the church. How can you think my daughters will be better off with even more men out of it?
But can you really countenance this prejudicial, patriarchal...
Frankly, it has changed in the past, and it may change in the future. Those are the details for you and him to work out. Whether it changes or not, you need a program just for the men, for the young men. The born-agains are finally understanding this with their Promise Keepers Stadium rallies and their New Man magazine. Blacks know this with their Million Man March...
Wait! Wait! You're backing Louis Farrakhan?
Please. I'm only saying his needs assessment is accurate. Mormons have been 150 years ahead of the game, and now you're going to pretend this problem is not a real one. Primitively, out in nature, as in some tribes today, men didn't even know they made babies. Fatherhood was not even a concept. It is only by artificial, cultural, religious means that men become part of their family. Artificially important. But what now is his unique, important position? Physical protector? That's gone. Sole breadwinner? That's gone. Sage-like dispenser of counsel and wisdom? That was always a joke. Stern disciplinarian? That's almost a crime. He isn't even needed a sperm donor anymore. So what's left? Pretending that Pop is the one to call people in for family prayer? Even that is mostly pretense? So what is left? Nothing? And surprise, surprise, shock of shock, men are fading away more and more. No longer needed as the central pillar, they are fading to the sides, abandoning more families, seeking pleasures, hurting my daughters more and more. The Sermon on the Mount is perhaps the greatest feminist document in ancient history, a call for men to voluntarily abandon their sexual, violent, aggressive natures and feminize and restrain themselves through service, humility, and submission. The sermon is taught in a million South American churches every Sunday. But how many young men are in the audiences to hear it?
This is an old argument. The priesthood is what? Sort of affirmative action for the spiritually handicapped?
I know it's not fair. Life never is. The criminal gets to be the center of attention far more than the law abider. The pregnant girl always gets more attention than the obedient one. The prodigal son always gets more Super Bowl parties than the good son. That's life.
So what? We baby men by making them the boss as sort of a petty bribe to keep them involved? I cannot believe God would stoop so low.
The scriptures are an entire history of him stooping so low. Petty threats and petty bribes, all for very fallible humans. Because over the generations, teenage boys will see that they are less and less needed as missionaries and bishops. And since they don't enjoy being in church in the first place, and since the fear of hellfire has been outlawed as spiritual abuse, they fade away from the church and from chastity, from fidelity, and from family. I'm not saying what should be done. I'm just saying that it's the one issue that everyone seems to ignore, and it needs to be faced honestly by those pushing for change.
Well, I must be honest. We never thought that you would come out against your own daughters.
Oh.
It's unfathomable.
Oh, dear, you're so right. I'm sorry. I've said far too much. I can't say any more. I only wanted to be truthful and helpful, and all I've done is to make you angry and hurt. It's better when I don't talk at all. When I'm silent, people can conceive me to be anything they need me to be at that moment. I never should have said anything in the first place. I can only truly nurture when I remain completely, eternally silent. That's the most loving thing I can do for my children. My greatest gift, silence.
But nurturing is an action, not an inaction. Silence is an inaction. Oh, well, back to you then. But let me understand this. Is she admitting the boys and girls are chemically different and that hormones and genes determine us? That's the old nature-nurture debate. Are we free or not? Which is it?
It's both.
Well, of course, both. But, I mean, how much of which? Which wins out?
You're really into quick answers, aren't you? It's funny. If someone claims there are genetic differences between men and women, they are immediately labeled a Nazi bigot. On the other hand, if they don't claim a genetic reason for gays versus straights, they're also a Nazi bigot. Another no-winner.
But do we really have free agency? Or is it just all biology?
Okay, I'll give you the answer. It's 71%, 28%, and 11.5%. There, you happy? When all is said and done, it's all biologically determined, but 11.5%. We only control the rudder, but the rudder can control everything else. So we're still responsible, and you won't be punished for Adam's sins or anyone else's, but you will be for your own. You don't have to feel guilty about all your dirty little natural instincts, just what you do with them. 11.5%. Satisfied?
Okay. Then, well, let me think. How about your personal life growing up? Is there anything you want to tell us about? I mean, oh, I don't know. What kind of a teenager were you? Were you ever tempted?
Well, Hebrews 4:15, of course, makes it clear that even my son was tempted in all things, but, well, I was one of the lucky ones. This is personal, but, well, I just felt deeply, madly, forever in love, and I guess a lot of people do, but when they said to give her my first priority, I actually took them seriously. I made a private commitment to take the daily actions necessary to keep those feelings alive. I decided that in our marriage, it was not my duty to always be right, but to always be righteous, to try to answer back with a soft voice no matter who was really right. When I was away on business, I would write love letters nightly. Whenever I was tempted, I could just blink and see her face on my eyelids. With every breath, I could taste her mouth and smell her hair. Every time I rubbed my fingers together, I could feel her skin. Every time I half-smiled, I heard her voice in my grin. When I traveled, well, honestly, I had to blink a lot. But it was easy with her, but this is too personal. Let's move on.
Well, but did you have any problems as a teenager?
Well, thank goodness for my Galaxy's version of the Boy Scouts in Little League. It was played with 7 balls and 3 bat throgs, but it was sort of like baseball. Who knows what I would have become without baseball and scouting. Have you ever noticed that the year, you know, I restored the gospel to Joseph Smith, and when he died and the priesthood didn't spread as fast as possible, that the very next year I had baseball invented?
You caused baseball?
What? I'm limited to just religion? Where does it say that?
Baseball? I mean, all the big bad baseball salaries and competition and pride and benching kids so they feel like losers, macho sports stuff.
See, that's the problem. Humans are not omniscient. You can only see what is, never what would have been otherwise. Like, everyone gets upset with my Salt Lake boys, but I'll tell you something. They are really good boys. They really are. They're not perfect by a long shot, but none of you can see the struggles they have had to overcome in their own lives. But I know their private lives. And while people seem to get upset at all their writings, I've seen what they would have done if they hadn't put so much time and energy into writing. Why do you think I made all this incredibly complex doctrine and history anyway? The articles of faith will save you, so what is all this other stuff? It's a trick to keep people busy writing and expounding, because I know what they would have done if they had more time on their hands. You don't like McConkie or Peterson, and they didn't like all the people writing sundial papers this time with their typewriters. Keeps them out of a lot of other mischief. And Hubie Brown and Hugh Nibley, too, but don't ask me about it. That's confidential.
But I'm still stunned at your baseball comment.
Well, yeah, it brings out a lot of bad things, but are we better off with it than without it? High school Neanderthals without sports are not a pretty sight. Some sports are too violent, some are too bland, some are too ritualistic, but baseball is my one and only true sport. The only thing that bugs me are those players and spectators who want all the thrills, but get ticked off at the umpires and all the rules. You can't have the benefits of organized professional sports without the other.
But sometimes the umpires are wrong.
Oh, tell me something I don't know. Most of them are pretty good. I already told you about the 8.2% jerk factor.
But, well, how do I say this? What if I just don't like baseball? What if I spend 20 years trying to force myself to like it and telling myself that I ought to like it and feeling guilty for not liking it, but one day I wake up and I just look in the mirror and admit, you know what? Baseball is not my sport. I'm not going anymore.
Then quit driving everyone else crazy and just go join a basketball team. Just leave and be happy.
My country, love it or leave it.
I don't mind suggestions. There's nothing so constant as change. It's great to try innovation in orange baseball, the designated hitter, night lights so we can see the dark clearly. Some changes will work and some won't, but they've all got to be approved by the commissioner or else it's chaos. That may sound like authoritarian dictatorship, but it's just a fact of life. You can't have all the benefits without all the rules and regulations. But if you wake up and find that baseball just isn't your thing, then get out and find a better sport and be happy. I'm not into martyrdom and torture. At times I've wanted to be. But I don't want baseball turned into a 99th version of basketball either. We need baseball to remain baseball.
Well, could we stop talking analogies? I am really getting confused. Now, Are you saying it's okay to leave the church? It's just a personal choice, after all.
I'm saying I get no thrill out of seeing you tortured.
But is it okay eternally?
Whatever you choose to do, leaving doesn't abolish my eternal commandments. People seem to want this made-up-in-your-own-image, feel-good church of what's happening now. You want the church of all good dogs go to heaven, so let me tell you my definition of what a good dog is. Good dogs give away 10% of their income. Good dogs live by a code of dietary laws. Good dogs make one day of the week extra special, holy. Good dogs practice self-control sex-wise. Good dogs sacrifice to love and build one other person all their life long. Good dogs serve others. Everyone is going to die, and if you choose to walk on holy or dangerous ground, you had better walk very carefully. My commandments count in the church or out. So, if that's about it.
No, wait. I mean, I must ask this. I must. Is Mormonism really your number one choice? Will you state categorically, here and now, that the Book of Mormon and the Salt Lake Prophets are 100% true?
I'd be more than happy to answer that, but you won't let me.
Won't let you? We're begging you. Go ahead. Say it if it's true.
Have you asked me privately, prayerfully?
Dozens of times. But look, there's all these people here. Think of the effect. Just say yes or no right now. We'll do whatever you say, please.
And you think I'd answer a question like that and rob you of the joys and tortures of answered prayers? You must think I'm a monster.
You're a monster if you won't say it straight out.
And rob you, right now, of the chance to go through all the torment and growth that comes from trying to figure it out on your own? A religion that does not kick you in the gut and wrench your heart out and twist it in knots, keeping you up all hours of the day or night, banging your head against the wall, isn't worth anything. You know all the tormenting questions. How many centuries of phony prophets must we live through before we realize that they're all phonies, but isn't it possible that this could be the one in a million that just might be true? How can I know for sure, and how come so many people tell me Moroni's promise works, but I can't break through the wall? And how come the church is way too full of human error to be fully divine, but it's way too divine to be fully human? And should I keep trying? And how could a church that could produce Benson and McConkie possibly be true? And how could a church that could produce J. Golden Kimball and B.H. Roberts possibly be false? And how can I get an answer? And should I try again? How much longer? Can it all and possibly miraculously be true? Possibly, maybe. Where is the gift of the Holy Ghost? If I go through any more nights like this, I can't think about it anymore. This is driving me crazy. I can't pray. I can't not pray. Is prayer worse before you get an answer, when you're not sure if anyone is listening, or after you get an answer, and you know you might get another, but you might not be what you want to hear? Night after night, so terrible, so wonderful, all the wild possibilities, the horror. And even if it's not true, I'm not asking for my tithing back, but will the church please pay for my therapy? Silence, darkness, torment, peace, war, surrender, rage, silence, and then, boom, you do. You get the answer. Glory, hallelujah, your greatest day on earth, or maybe your most terrible. You tell me. And here and now, you want me to rob you of that growth and that day of glory. Why don't you just ask me to describe sex so you'll never have to experience that either? Do you really, really deep down want me to tell you?
Yes. Yes, I do. You always dodge these questions straight up, once and for all. Yes or no. Don't be chicken.
And you'll do it. If I tell you right now, it will make a difference. You promise.
Yes. There. I promise.
You'll cut your discretionary spending in half and give up your PG-13 movies and your modern lit and intellectual pride and switch political parties and stop noticing the kids in the tight pants and join abortion clinic sit-ins and give three of the nearby homeless a permanent bedroom in your own home and read McConkie and Packer morning, noon, and night and open the borders to all the Mexicans and vote for increased taxes and the death penalty and against gay and lesbian centers or vice versa and be absolutely obedient and submissive in absolutely everything whenever they lead you, especially when one of the 8.2% lead you, just on my say-so, right here and now, you promise.
Well,
who's chicken? You don't really want me to comment, do you? Deep down, no comments may seem like hell, but really, isn't it actually what you really, really want? I love you, but I think you love me most. I think you love me more than you even realize, only when I'm silent.
No. Sure, I mean, we are weak, and we are doubtful, but we need help. We really do. And we want you to help us. We need you. We need to hear from you. Please. Oh, what? You're not talking now? What kind of a game is this? Oh, no, wait. I've got about a trillion more questions. Like, what about polygamy? And the 1978 revelation, and gay marriages, and evolution, and Brigham Young on slavery, and Joseph Fielding about men on the moon, you remember, and academic freedom, and the church finances, and the century's almost over. What about the second coming? Come on. Well, come on. Don't leave us just like this. Come on. Chris Conkling, Mystery Number One, wrote the screenplay for the United Artists film Lord of the Rings and the Deseret book, A Joseph Smith Chronology. His article on the Book of Jacob was published in The Ensign, and his article on the LDS Church in Japan, published in BYU Studies, won a Mormon History Award. He served a mission in Japan and is now advertising director at Axios Auto Shade. They make those things that go in your front windshield. His wife, Robin, is the director of a preschool. He has 6 children, including a son, on a mission in New Zealand. Pauline Porter is neither shy nor timid in this phase of her mortality. She's known Chris for 20 years, still a good friend. She claims her qualification is that she can read. She's from Palmdale, California, and works for an insurance company. I'm Carol Quist. I'm I'm an office manager at Sunstone Foundation, which pretty well means I do what they tell me. Thank you for coming today.